episode of The Spicy Life. I am your relationship expert and magnetic matchmaker, Spicy Madi. And on today's episode of The Spicy Life, we are tackling how to conquer imposter syndrome. So sitting in the G-spot with me is the lovely, the beautiful Sherita Bates. And she is an LMFT life coach, adjunct psychology professor who's passionate about helping people step out of their comfort zones and radically transform their lives. She has spent the last 10 years helping people learn about and break the habits that are holding them back and stopping imposter syndrome and self-sabotage one baby step at a time. The crowd goes wild for Sherita in the building. Yay! Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me. This is exciting.
Yeah, this is going to be an amazing topic. I have to warm you up though. So I have to first make you answer this very important question. When did you first fall in love with yourself?
Ooh, let's see. I want to say probably around 30. Around when I turned 30, maybe a little earlier, but I think that's when I really was into self-care, self-love, doing more things that I like just because I like to do it.
Yeah.
And not caring so much about what other people thought I should do. And just having a lot more fun.
Okay. So here's a follow-up to that. When did you first fall in love with someone else?
Much earlier, teens, and then especially in my early 20s, for sure.
Isn't it crazy, like how we take so long to fall in love with ourselves, but we fall in love with someone else first?
Yeah, and it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense because you can't really truly love somebody until you love yourself.
Right.
But we do it backwards sometimes.
We see that message all the time now. Don't you wish when we were younger that message was more like out there in the universe, or our parents knew that message to really like make sure that that was a fundamental element to us?
Yeah. So,
but all that matters is that we are loving on ourselves now.
Yes, absolutely.
So we're gonna love on the audience today by helping you guys out with something that I know my clients struggle with. I have friends who struggle with this, family members that struggle with this, a lot of people that struggle with imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
But can you, in your expertise, give us background on what exactly that is? Because some people may or may not be familiar with it, currently struggling with it. You know, what is imposter syndrome exactly?
Okay, so imposter syndrome is basically you feeling inadequate or not worthy of whatever it is you already have. That's the crazy part. You've already achieved a certain level of success, whatever that might be for you. So it could be a job. It could be a relationship. It could be even buying a car, buying a house. You already have the thing that you don't think you deserve, or you've earned it. You think you got it because of luck, and that people are going to find you out, and then that thing is going to disappear or go away. And it sticks with you no matter what for a really long time, unless you address it.
So what are some like key identifiers if we're someone who's struggling with that right now? What are some of the things that we're telling ourselves that will let us know, like maybe we have it, or maybe we're dating someone who has it?
Okay, so you're gonna a lot of self-doubt, a lot of criticism, like self-critical about yourself. You're gonna feel, if they compliment you, this is a really big one. If they're getting complimented, you're just going to, oh, well, they must want something. They don't believe it. They're just trying to be nice. You're not going to believe people. The unworthiness, the undeserving. And there's usually some fear, anxiety, and sometimes depression related around whatever it is that you think. So if you're dating somebody, there's going to be a lot of anxiety. If it's a job, there's going to be that anxiety, and then the overdoing it, like a lot of overwork and stuff like that.
Is it something that's common, or is it something like we can just brush under the rug and not really trip off of it? Like how fatal or detrimental is it to our well-being?
If you brush it under the rug, you are going to self-sabotage yourself every time. So it is something to be aware of. It's something to be intentional about working on. And you can work through it. There's a lot of things that you can do, some simple things too, as far as going to talk to a therapist, which we'll get into. But no, you absolutely want to address it. And I have found that the smarter the person, the more successful, the high achievers, they're the ones who have it the most.
Yep.
And again, I cannot emphasize this enough. It's the people that already have, they already have it. They're not working for it. They already have it, and they think it's going to go away because they got it because they're a frog. They're not a fraud.
You know what I deal with a lot with my clients is them coming into the spicy life and them struggling when it comes to dating, because they initially start off with like killing it. They feel like, I'm able to convince this person that I'm confident, or able to get the person interested, but then they start to struggle when it comes to the person starting to learn more about them and then really opening up and sharing, because then this fear of like, if they find out who I really am, they're not going to want me. And so let me keep this mask on. Let me keep up this facade. But then it winds up them not being able to feel like their authentic selves. And now the person doesn't really know who they signed up for, and whether there's this real connection or if it's been, you know, created or fabricated based off of, you know, this other version of them. Yeah. So that is something that I see common. What do you see a lot in relationships when it comes to imposter syndrome?
Exactly what you said, except now they're acting it out. So they feel like, if this person knows who I really am, if this person knows how I really feel, how I really think, what I really like to do or what I really don't like to do, they're not going to want me. They're going to leave me. They're going to think I am too much, too little, not enough. And that's going to be the end of it. And so it comes out in so many different ways. So the person who thinks that way, they're also going to show up in the relationship that way. They are going to start believing that the other person is looking at them the same way that they're looking at themselves. And usually the other person is looking at them like, oh, you're so amazing. You're so this, you're so that. And they won't believe it. So now they get the compliment, or this person is like trying to spend this time with them, and they're just like, oh, this, they don't really want me. But if
what's
they
up
only
their
knew,
sleeve? What's
yeah,
up
they must want something.
Yeah,
exactly. It's just for like this ugly cycle. And they show up, and then the self-sabotage is the part that gets people every single time.
For those who don't understand the concept of self-sabotage, what is self-sabotage and how does it show up?
Okay, so self-sabotage is when you, it's usually, again, people have it already. And because they don't believe they deserve it, now they're going to do stuff, usually unconsciously, to make sure they don't have it anymore. So in relationships, this can show up as doing the very things that, you know, if you do these in a relationship, it's not going to work. So starting to be dishonest, probably about stuff that's just not even making any sense. You could be an honest person, but now you're going to start doing these little tiny things, not showing up, picking fights, being self-critical, being just looking at yourself in a negative way. All of that stuff. And then pointing at the other person. So sometimes people get critical of the other person because they're projecting onto somebody else, picking fights. Those are some of the things I've seen most often. And it's really sad because the other person doesn't know what's going on. And you tend to see this, like you were saying, in the beginning, they're killing it. Everything is wonderful. And then after they haven't been caught yet, then they start to do these little things, and then those little things turn into big things until it gets too much. And then eventually, if it's not caught, the relationship will end.
Wouldn't you say that it is driven by fear, though?
It's always fear, fear and insecurities. And what's unfortunate,
that they start to manifest.
They do. And what you think, I'm a big, what you think, what you put in there, and you can adjust what you think is going to come out in your feelings, and how you feel is going to start coming out in your action. It's just a really sad thing, and it's avoidable. That's the thing. It doesn't have to be that way, but you do have to be aware of it. And then you have to be intentional about making sure that you don't continue to do those things and think that way, so that you do hold on to what you already worked for.
Right.
You already
did
this. You're already amazing. You already have the thing. So just be confident that you deserve that because you have it already.
Okay. So we are going to get into, like, you just mentioned it's avoidable. So I do, of course, want to talk about how to avoid those things. But before we get into how it's avoidable, I want us to not just discuss imposter syndrome, because we just talked about self-sabotage right now and how they're related, but I want us to explore imposter syndrome a little bit more. And what causes it? So, like, what's the trigger for it? Are we born with imposter syndrome? Do we get it from our parents? We're acting out based on what we saw, you know, growing up. Like, where does it come from? What's the creator? What's the spark of imposter syndrome?
There's a few different ways a person can get it. So sometimes it's because now you're on a new level. So let's say you're a student, you've been a student and you decide, I see this a lot. I work with students all the time. So I see this a lot in therapy where you have a student and now they're graduating and they're like, okay, well, I need to go confer with this person because I don't think I'm a therapist. Mm. You already have clients. Like, you are a therapist now. That's it. You are it. But they don't believe that. They're still seeing themselves as a student. Somebody will take simple buying a car. Maybe they didn't have the kind of car they wanted before, and now they purchased the car that they want. And so, but they still see themselves as the before person. Mm. They don't see themselves as the after. So going to a new level is one of the ways. Your story of origin. I love all of these superhero movies. So we have all these origin movies. So your story of origin is also a really good way to see it. So if you live in a family who are high achievers, again, this happens a lot in high achieving homes, then there's this importance on achieving, achieving, achieving. And so that just kind of creates the habit of you do all of these things to achieve mm-hmm. a certain. And sometimes people just don't recognize all of the thinking that goes behind that. So they continue to believe that they're not enough. And sometimes you might also grow up in a family where the critical part is a little unbalanced. They're not getting the praise. They're not getting like, you're already good at this. It's just like, you need to do better. You need to do better. And so those are some contributors to where it comes from.
Wow. I'm sure a lot of people can identify with this. Either they've experienced the household that's super critical or the household that like is extremely successful, or maybe the household that like didn't even push you at all, didn't even notice you were alive maybe. And now you don't even believe it yourself that you're able to achieve these things. And so that's maybe then where the self-sabotage comes in, because you're like, well, I don't really deserve it. I've never seen anybody get it. So mm-hmm. is it really meant for me? Is this really something that I'm worthy of, right? Like there's some self-worth questions that come into play. Let's talk a little bit about the different types of character types that come with imposter syndrome. So I'm gonna throw them out here. You're gonna give me a little bit of background on each one.
Okay.
Because these are common ones that I think people will be able to identify, right? So the perfectionist, how are they struggling with imposter syndrome?
Okay, so the perfectionist is probably the most common one we're gonna see. Mm-hmm. And that's the one who everything has to be perfect. What this actually looks like though, is a lot of procrastination. So you're gonna have a perfectionist procrastinate because they don't want to do it until it's perfect.
Yeah.
So they will, they're going to run circles. So they're going to stay up much later. They're going to over-prepare for something. They're going to look at every little detail. And if that one little detail isn't perfect, then they don't want to do it at all. They're going to put it off because they know it's going to take so much work to get it done. That's the perfectionist.
But then we have the superhero. Do you know what the superhero one is?
The superhero is the one who is going to do all of the things. They're not going to say no. They're going to, they're the superhero. They're coming in to save the day. And they want people to look at them as like the savior and, you know, Superman. So it's fun, but it's crippling because you can't, they're going to be tired because they're constantly going. And they're not also getting help because Superman doesn't need help.
Right. They're not asking for the support that they need.
They're not asking for support. And when they're burnt out, they're also not saying no. They're accepting it. Like, yeah, I can do that. Yes, I can take care of that. And they're all things to all people. And so that leaves them sometimes resentful. And then also
just going to ask them, does the superhero get resentful at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
See, you guys got to be careful. Okay, the perfectionist, the superhero. What about the expert? The know-it-all. What about the expert?
The expert, I always think the expert is kind of like the perfectionist, except the perfectionist is trying to make sure all the details are done, where the expert is the planner, but uh-huh. to exhaustion. You know, that person who reads all of the reviews, they don't buy anything because they have to read all the reviews first. And they're like in this whole like, okay, I need to make this decision. They're the researcher. So they typically are not doing what they need to do because they're always in plan mode. And research mode because they want it to be perfect. So they're close. Perfectionist is going to do, or they're going to procrastinate. The expert isn't doing only because they're continuously planning and researching.
You guys, did any of these sound familiar to you? Like, for real. I hope you guys are paying attention and saying like, that one's me. That one could be me. Yeah. Like, pay attention to these because these are going to help you identify like which one you are so that you can work through it. Okay, the next one is the natural genius.
Oh, this one is, okay. So the natural genius is the person who they feel like they shouldn't have to work at it. It should come naturally to them. And this is also the person who compares. So this is where social media really gets people in trouble. On social media, you're going to see people, everything looks perfect. Everything is wonderful. And so for the natural genius, they think that if it doesn't come naturally to me, then it's not for me. I shouldn't have to work at it. And not understanding that a lot of people that do things, it is actually out of repetition. They put some work in behind it. They might've studied it. The natural genius is just like, if it's not easy for me, if I don't pick it up quickly, then that's it. It's a wrap. And there must be something wrong with me because I'm not naturally able to just do it. And, but they also think everyone else is just a natural at certain things. And it's like, no, they did some work. They practiced it. They put the work in for it. They didn't wake up and they're like, oh, this is wonderful. And social media makes us think that that's how things work. It doesn't.
We're going to have to discuss that in a second too. Like social media and how it affects imposter syndrome. The last one is the soloist.
Okay. So the soloist is, nobody's going to do it as well as I can. I know a lot of people like this. I might have been like this before. I might be recovering soloist. Like, I'm just going to do it myself. I don't need help. Just let me just do it. They're not going to do it the way I need to. It needs to be. So it's kind of a combination. Again, I go back a lot to the perfectionist because there's little pieces of that in all of them. But the soloist is the one who wants to do it themselves, but needs help, but will not accept the help. And so resentment is going to fall in here too. Not finishing things because it was harder than they thought. They didn't accept the help, or they're going to get burned out at the end of the day for whatever reason, because they're trying to do it on their own.
Okay. All of these sound like there's a lot of challenges that come with it. Especially if, you know, you guys are one of the people who are struggling with this. We're highlighting these so that you can identify, you know, which one maybe you are. But, you know, you brought up a point earlier, Sharita, about social media. Yeah. I feel like that affects everybody, even if you don't have imposter syndrome. But how does social media and social comparison play into imposter syndrome? How does it affect you directly?
Because social media doesn't point out the difficulties people have. Social media is not showing that this person tried 8 times before they actually got it the way they wanted to. It shows the perfect picture. And so even if you're not trying to compare yourself, it's hard not to when you are seeing the things that you want, or you're seeing things that seem effortless and you're over here struggling, or you're seeing the real thing. And so on the flip side, the people that do show that, because you do have accounts where they're like, okay, this didn't work.
Yeah.
No, and then the people don't necessarily want to follow that. They're just like, that looks hard. That looks difficult. That looks stressful. Let me go over here where everything is already pretty and perfect. And there's just a lot of comparison, and it's not realistic. It's just not realistic. And so people don't always intentionally say, I'm going to compare myself to this person or this account. But what happens is they internalize that, and then they start acting out in that way. And some of these negative thoughts start creeping in, and they don't understand why they feel a certain way. So it's just really important to be intentional about what you take in. Basically like a mental diet. So whatever, if you have imposter syndrome, you want to be very intentional about the diet that you allow in, because that's going to affect how much imposter syndrome is going to be a problem, or how little it's going to be a problem for you, or if you can just get rid of it altogether, which you can, you absolutely can, but it's not going to just go away because you don't like it anymore. You have to actually do some things in order for it to go away.
Okay. And we're going to get into what those things are. But I like the suggestions that you gave about kind of like dieting when it comes to social media. I think that that's a good tip right there. So you guys better listen to that spicy tip. She just gave you a gem. Like, we don't need to absorb or consume everything, just the things that maybe are good for us. So don't be afraid to unfollow pages that make you feel a certain type of way, right?
And
or
that's
people that affect you.
Or even paying attention. So with a lot of the clients I work with, they're not aware of how they feel. They're not aware of what they think. And that's some of the work we do, is just like, let's pause for a little bit. What do you think? And so if you're going through social media and you're just scrolling, and most people just do it, they're not thinking. It's just kind of like they're bored. So I'm just going to scroll. And so you're not aware of how does this particular account affect you? How do you feel when you're looking at this picture, or when you're reading the story, or you're looking at this quote? And so if people would just take a little bit of time, it doesn't even take a lot, maybe 5 minutes on purpose as you scroll, just pause and say, how do you feel after I'm looking at this? And then say, okay, you know what? I don't like how that feels. Even if it's stuff that looks like it's supposed to be healthy, if it makes you feel funky, then unfollow, mute it, do something, and just be very intentional about what you allow in. Just like food, if you're going to eat food that makes you feel sick, you're probably going to stop eating it as often because you don't like how you feel after you eat it. So we need to do that with our mental and emotional diets as well. Is I don't feel good when I consume this kind of information, so I need to limit it or eliminate it altogether.
Yeah, I had to do that with sugar. I'm like, it's not the best for me. Though I feel so guilty afterwards, and my body feels drained. It's hard for me to work out, even with alcohol, because that would be, you know, one of my like vices. I'm a tequila girl. Not right now, but but like at a certain point, I was like, I have to take a detox because I don't like the way that it's making me feel, and the way that I wake up in the morning, or you know, the decisions that I'm making, even. And so I like this comparison to, you know, dieting and sometimes releasing some of the things that don't serve us.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, tequila, me and tequila had a horrible, horrible breakup a long time ago. It was on and off. I was like, no, this can't be right. And I was getting too sick. I would take a little teaspoon of tequila and I'm like, why do I feel so sick? And you don't want to. So that's the other part, is being aware that you may not want to. You might love something. You might love it, but how does it make you feel? And if it makes you feel bad, you might have to let it go.
Ooh, this sounds like a relationship right here. I'm just saying, that sounds like a bad relationship. Okay, so now we're going to get into like the nitty gritty of like methods to cope with imposter syndrome. So what are some methods that you would suggest for coping with imposter syndrome right now?
Okay, so the first one, again, I just see this so commonly, is sometimes people they're not aware. Mm-hmm. So being aware of how are they feeling and what are they thinking. And then I love to do like little cheat codes. So looking in your environment, so this goes with the mental diet, what's in your environment? Are there things in your environment that are going to add to you having more imposter syndrome, or are there things in your environment that are going to help you accept the identity that you actually have? So again, imposter syndrome is for people who they already have it, but think they don't deserve it. So you already have this identity. Do you want to keep it? So you have to look around you and say, okay, well, what are some things that are going away from it? What are some things that are helping me believe that I do deserve these things? So that's number one. How you can cheat that is sometimes as simple as, this is going to sound so corny. Okay. So nobody judge the corniness. This stuff works. It's going to sound so corny though, but sometimes it's writing little sticky notes of affirmations, but not typical affirmations. So a typical affirmation would be, I am amazing. Okay, well, if you have imposter syndrome, you don't feel amazing. So that is not going to work for you. You need to do an affirmation that you already believe. So some people might call this a bridge thought. So let's say I don't have this, but let's just say I had imposter syndrome about being a therapist. I am a therapist. I didn't say I'm amazing a therapist, because if I have imposter syndrome, I don't believe that yet, but it's a yet. So you say, I am a therapist, and you put that as a sticky, because what you think about, you become. Mm-hmm. And if you're thinking the opposite, you need to feed yourself the types of thoughts that you actually want to have. So maybe you put these on the mirror in your bathroom. Maybe you put these on the refrigerator. Maybe you put them on your computer, but you put sticky notes with the thoughts that you want to believe. The other thing is that you ask yourself questions. So a lot of times with imposter syndrome, we're making statements. I don't deserve this. Instead of saying that statement, ask a question, why do I deserve this? And your brain is actually going to go to work and find the reasons of why you deserve it. You have to be careful though. Do not ask your brain why you don't deserve it, because then your brain will go to work to find all the reasons you don't deserve it. So you have to put it in the positive. Why do I deserve this? I deserve this because I went to school for it, because I just wanted it, because I enjoy it. Whatever the reason might be, those could be the reasons. So you ask yourself questions, not just the statement, and ask yourself the question in a positive way. The other thing is look at the facts. So a lot of times we will go with perception. I think this. Well, thoughts are not facts. So go with the actual fact. You already have the job. So that's a fact. You have the job. You showed up to your job. That's another fact. You have clients. That's another fact. You are in a relationship. That's a fact. You went out on a date yesterday. That's a fact. So stick with the facts, and that's going to really help you think about it. Now, if you're thinking about that this person doesn't like me, that's a thought and it's not a fact. So you want to stay away from the thoughts. Again, except the ones that you're feeding yourself, the positive ones, and you want to stick with the facts in the beginning. And then it's like a muscle. You're going to get better and better and better at it until you start believing it.
I love this suggestion. It's similar to an exercise that I do with my client where if my clients are struggling with this around relationships, I'll make them to two categories, fact and fiction. Mm-hmm. And they write what that belief is, right? What that belief is that they have. And then they have to label it based on what I challenge their evidence to be, if it's fact or fiction. 9 times out of 10, the things that we believe about ourselves all go in the fiction. Yeah. And I'm like, so you're just walking around believing this thing without any support or evidence, analysis, like no data. You just want to just believe this? Come on now.
Yeah, my friend and I, we call it the dark, like we're in a dark place. And so if either of us gets into this place of darkness where we're just telling a total story, we're like, well, let's turn all the lights off then. And let's just go into the whole story, into the dark, because it's not supported. And that's the other part, is to find evidence that is supporting where you are. Again, that's going back to the facts. But it's so easy to tell a story until you get used to it. So it's like building a muscle. You start off light, you get heavier and heavier. With repetition, you can do it easier and easier. You don't have to think about it after a while.
What do you feel about people struggling with imposter syndrome sharing their feelings with others? Is this something that is helpful if we're struggling with some maybe unrealistic or irrational beliefs, telling others how we feel about that? Is that helpful, or does that sometimes hurt us?
It could go either way. So it really depends on the people around you. So if you have a therapist, I am biased to therapy. Okay, that's not obvious.
Get yourself a therapist if you don't have one.
Everyone should have a therapist. Like, why don't you have a therapist? If you don't have one, why not? So if you have a therapist is going to help you with those thoughts. Going to friends or family can be sticky, because are they going to support those negative thoughts, or are they going to almost make you dependent on them to pull yourself out of it? Versus a therapist, because somebody could say, well, a therapist might make me dependent on the therapist, but actually therapists are supposed to help you figure it out and guide yourself. So eventually you can do that on your own.
Yep.
Friends sometimes will, if you find yourself having the same conversation over and over for the same problems with your friends, that's going to be an indicator that it may not be as helpful to talk to your friends about it. But I also am a big component of share your feelings. Don't go through things alone. But get good people around you.
So. I like to tell my clients to assess their abilities through doing like a personal SWOT on themselves. So like going inward and doing their own SWOT analysis of like their strengths or weaknesses, opportunities and threats. So like the strengths are, what am I really good at? What am I brilliant at? What makes me amazing? If I'm going to say that affirmation, like, where's the evidence of that, right? Here are the things that make me the incredible person that I am. And then what are my weaknesses? What are the things that make me insecure that I don't like about myself? Mm-hmm. And then what are the things that I can work on for those weaknesses? So where are the opportunities of growth? Like, what are the actions that I can take right now to start improving those weaknesses? And then the threat is, what the heck's going to happen if I don't work on these weaknesses or these insecurities? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to my love life? And so assessing that, I feel like, for yourself gives you a clear, you know, indicator of like being able to, you know, pump yourself up with those strengths and then starting to chip away at those weaknesses. And we're not going to be able to fix every single weakness. My goal for like my clients, and I'm sure for yours as well, is not to fix every single weakness. It's more to become aware of it, tackle the ones that we are capable of working on. Mm-hmm. And then that way, when our purpose mate or our partner comes along, they don't have 100% of those things, of those weaknesses that they have to deal with or work on. It's like, right, we worked on 70%. Now you just got to work on like your, you know, 30% through this relationship, because we're not going to be perfect when that person meets us.
Right.
But doing what we can, I feel like, really definitely helps when you assess your abilities. What about taking baby steps? Like, should we just like deep dive into trying to like solve for our imposter syndrome, or should we go little bit by little bit?
I say little bit by little bit, because you also want to be consistent and you want to keep doing this. And so if you take off to, if you do a deep dive, you're probably going to quit after like a couple of days because you're tired. If you do little baby steps, you're going to start to notice shifts and changes. A little bit goes a long way, and then it's going to make you stronger, so you can do more and more. And this stuff does not have to take a long time. This isn't something that has to take like a year. It doesn't have to take 6 months. You do a little bit at a time, and you'd be surprised at how much movement you have in 2 weeks, how much movement you will have after a month. And you just have to keep at it little bit by little bit. And I say, I'm in the fan of every day though. You do a little bit every day, you're going to see some major shifts happening in your life.
What about the comparison component? What can they do for comparison? So maybe it's not just social media. Maybe they're comparing their accolades to other people's accolades, or maybe like the whole factor with, this is not where I thought I was going to be at this age, or with my love life, or with my career. And so these thoughts start to creep in, these negative thoughts. And now they're comparing themselves to other people who have what they want at the time that they have, you know, that they want it. What advice would you have for those struggling, you know, with the comparison that's going on?
I think with comparison, I always want to tell people, you need to do a detox. So get off of social media altogether for a little bit of time, you know, but for people who are doing this with other people, let's say a coworker or a neighbor, a friend, whoever, make a list. And this is a little bit every day of your own accomplishments, and start with small things and do it every day. 5 things a day. What did you accomplish today? What did you work at and accomplish? What was the challenge that you set for yourself, or what goal did you set for yourself that you worked at and you achieved that? And look at yourself. And if you're busy, just like, okay, I did this, it's going to leave you with less time to look at what somebody else is doing. And we don't know what other people do behind closed doors. We think we do. We really think we do, but we don't know what's going on. We don't know the kind of help somebody else might have. We don't know if they're staying up all night because maybe they have imposter syndrome. So really doing the work on ourselves and being accepting of who we are. Do we need to have the same things that this other person has? Why? You know, asking the questions, what's why? Why do we need to have what they have?
To stay just really quick on the comparison component, because I see this often with people who are dating, right? They think that, or they have these expectations, you know, of other couples that, you know, well, I see him being affectionate and my man's not affectionate, or the guy who I'm seeing is not affectionate, or this person is extremely financially successful and buying their partner, you know, a ton of gifts. The guy who I'm dating isn't doing that. You know, like, they're doing this comparison all the time, therefore sabotaging like what they do have, or maybe something that, you know, someone who really cares about them. You know, what advice do you have those people who keep comparing their dating experience or relationship to other people's relationship? How can they stop so that they can actually get the person who they want and get the relationship goal accomplished?
They can start being grateful for what they do have. So looking in their own relationship and say, okay, what do I like about what my man does? What do I like about what my partner does? What am I appreciative of? And also, what am I doing for my partner, for my man, so that they're also appreciative? And that's, if we're looking at other people, we're probably not doing things. So I really believe that what we appreciate grows, what you're grateful for grows. And then I'm also in the camp of, are you sharing what your needs are? Did you communicate those?
But I just dealt with that today with a friend, actually, not even a client, but a friend who is doing the same exact thing, like the, you know, comparison and, you know, not operating from a place of like gratitude, therefore feeling like, well, I'm going to be, you know, out, I'm going to jump out of this relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wait, before this, I'm liking what the certain things that I'm hearing about this person. Have you communicated your needs to them?
Yeah.
Because you have these expectations that they're unaware of. And so I'm not an advocate of like shutting down expectations. I actually understand why people have expectations mm-hmm. or standards, right? But we are told on memes and all that, that like expectations mess us up. I'm a firm believer that not communicating your expectations mess you up. So if you're going to walk away, have you had, you know, open, honest communication first and given that person an opportunity first to solve for or try to attempt to meet your needs before right. we decide we're just going to kick them to the curb.
Right.
So literally and just dealt with this today.
It's communication is so big. And I think because we say communication so much, people are just like, oh, it's just background noise, but it's huge. And then also how you communicate the need too. So that if you communicate it as a criticism, well, or a complaint, you probably aren't going to get the outcome you want. If you communicate it as, you know, I'd really like this and I think we can do this or whatever, you might have a better outcome because people generally want to please the other person.
Correct.
That's usually what we get.
I say affirm them first. Tell them what mm-hmm. they need, what you think they're doing that's great first. Then we're going to give the need or constructive criticism or what we want them to work on. And then we're going to affirm them again.
Yes. The sandwich.
The sandwich. Yes. Because people do shut down when we start to attack them. They do get defensive sometimes. Yeah. And if we haven't practiced our delivery or the message that we're sending when it comes to communication and how that person's going to receive the information, right? We have to really know our audience before yeah. we just spitting out, you know, what our needs are or what that complaint is. And it doesn't have to feel like confrontation. It can feel just like, you know, positive reinforcement with a little bit of like a request in there.
Right. Exactly.
There's a strategy yeah. to this.
Mm-hmm. And it goes a long way. It really, really does.
It does. I love what you're saying, but I'm hearing a lot about feelings and emotions. And so those struggling with imposter syndrome, should they be fighting the emotions that they're feeling or accept and acknowledge that they're feeling these feelings and then begin to like tackle them or just try to get over them?
No, they need to acknowledge the feeling, but the feelings are not permanent. Know that they're temporary and they're also not facts. Okay. We go watch a horror movie. We're going to feel scared. That doesn't mean that we're actually in something scary is actually happening. It's a movie. It's fake. So the feeling might be very intense, but it's still just a feeling. And if we sit with it, it'll go away quicker. If we try to make it go away, sometimes it'll get stronger. So acknowledge it. Try to, if you can, figure out where it's coming from and then do some of the steps like, okay, wait a second. I feel like I'm going to be found out. I'm feeling anxious right now. Okay, well, why? And then, oh, well, because I don't feel adequate right now. And then just kind of do some backwards work, like why? And then what can you do to feel more adequate, which can get a little, or tell yourself, what did I do to get here? I showed up for work. What's the fact? I'm here. I'm ready for this date. I really love this person, or I really like this person. It could be something new. I can't wait to see what happens or where this goes or what have you. But I'm always acknowledge. If you push it away, you're going to see some things happen in probably not the most positive way. So don't ignore it. Don't try to squash it. Just accept it and keep it moving.
We don't want that. So we want you guys to stay in the positive vibrating thoughts. Okay. Sharita, for those who have friends or family members who are struggling with imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. How do we support them when the only thing that we know to do is like, affirm them, right? We give them a compliment, like you said earlier, like, and you reject compliments. Like that's a telltale sign that like the person is struggling with this acceptance. So maybe we're giving them compliments, or we're trying to pump them up, or we're trying to cheer for them, but they're not receiving it. But we don't know what else to do. How do we support folks who have imposter syndrome? If maybe you're in a relationship with someone who has it, or you have friends who have it, or family, what should we do in order to show up for them the best way possible?
A few things. One is just listen, validate what they're thinking and feeling. That doesn't mean we're trying to fix it. We don't have to agree with it, because they could be like, well, I'm terrible. Okay, I heard you. You're wrong. You know, you don't want to say that, but, you know, just listening is one. Another thing is just to show them or give them facts. Well, actually, I think you're so amazing because, and then state the facts, because you can't reject a fact. You can reject a compliment. If you just say you're amazing, that's easy to reject. You know, you're biased because you're the friend. But if you are like, well, you're amazing because the other day you did such and such, that's going to go a lot further. And then they're going to hold on to that. And it helps them remember the things, because people tend to forget. They forgot. So you're just giving them receipts. Like, oh, let me pull this out of my purse and hand it to you. Here you go. This is what you did. So I love facts. If we stick to the facts, most of the time, it's going to carry us a really long way.
I'm going to start pulling out receipts for everybody. I love that.
They need that. People forget. They forget so often because they're in this dark place. So, and then joke. I like to joke with people like, okay, let's turn off the lights then. But no, you're amazing because you did this thing. Do you remember that? You did this thing for this other person, or you just did this whole performance over here, or you just booked this. Like, just reminding people of the things that they actually did as a fact, they can't reject it, because they're going to say, no, I didn't. Well, here's the receipt. It's with the date and time, like, here it is. So, yeah.
I love it. Okay. These are great. You guys, Shrewd has been dropping gems. I hope you've been taking notes. We're going to wrap up with Dear Spicy. You're going to answer one of our listener letters. But this is actually someone who DM'd me this letter asking for social relationship advice, but they're remaining anonymous because, you know, they have a partner and they don't want to put their business out there, but they did say that I can read this out loud. Okay.
Okay.
So this is how the message goes. And it's from a post. So what I did was I posted on my IG at Spicy Mari. It's not hard to recognize when someone is no longer for you. It's just hard to accept. And that hit them, right? They're like, ugh, you hit the nail on the head with this. I've been divorced from my ex-husband for 13 years. In the beginning, we messed around with when the kids would visit. Now our kids are 23, 20, and 15. We went on vacation last summer and we slept together again. But aside from all that physical stuff, something I've always felt was that if we sat down and had a real serious talk about how we felt, I'd probably give us another chance. He just doesn't do confrontation well, and I don't know what to do. I want to find my life partner, but something tells me he was it. We were together for 13 years. I've known him for 25 plus years now. I think we were too young to know what marriage really was, but I think now that we've given ourselves time to grow, he's the type of man I look for in other men and can't find. How do I move past this feeling and move forward without telling him, because he never makes himself available for this type of conversation? What is our advice to her?
Wow.
Right? It sounds like
that's heavy.
A love tangle.
Yeah, that's so heavy. So I would start with acknowledging how she's feeling. Okay. So really, and I like to write things down because sometimes they start to shift and transform and you get this information and now it changes your thoughts. So writing down exactly how she feels about the situation. And what does she want? And we're going to, like, you know, take a piece of paper and write down the middle. What does she want and what is actually happening? What are the facts? Because sometimes the facts are going to answer the question. There's a reason why they're not together. There's a reason why maybe he doesn't want to talk. There's a reason why she is feeling like she's still in this space. So she really needs to untangle that. And I think just writing her feelings down, what's actually happening, what does she want? And then communicating, which doesn't look like it's going to happen on the other party. So she has to also let herself know at what point, what does she need in order to walk away from this? And or what would she need from him to stay in this?
Great question.
It's really a tough one because I always want more information. I always want to talk it out a little bit more, but I ask so many questions where they have to really think about what is the motivation behind it. And most of the time they answer their own questions. So sitting down, journaling it out, writing the facts, not the thoughts. Again, we love a story. We love a good story. And so she's probably telling herself an amazing story about how amazing he is and all of this wonderful stuff. And other people may not be living up to him. Well, that's because she's still looking at him. So what is it about him that she likes so much? And is it her perception of who she thought he was, or is that actually how he is? And if you put it on paper, sometimes it makes it a lot more clear.
I love that, because sometimes even we're fantasizing about the future and not really what's happening in the present. Like if he's emotionally unavailable, he is not great with maybe conflict or even conflict resolution or, mm-hmm. you know, what she thinks to be confrontation. Those skills aren't going to change overnight. That skill, like those sentiments are not going to shift that easily. That will be a work in progress. So if she's really dealing with like the current, the present, you know, how he's showing up right now for her, then she probably will have her, you know, her answer figured out. But if it's going off of the fantasy of like, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, or, you know, dang, if we could just get it together, it would be like this.
Right.
Sometimes we fall in love with that idea of if we could just get it together, it's going to be amazing. But there's no evidence or past history of
that's the story. That's the whole story. So we need to write down the facts. Okay, so this man is amazing. Let's write those facts down. What's amazing that he's actually doing? Not what you want him or wish he was doing. What is he actually doing? And then what's happening right now? Is it is what you think he's going to do happening? And if it's not, it's just going to become very clear. Because in our heads, again, we love a good story. Things look a little bit different than they actually are in reality sometimes. And not to say she can't have that, but it's not the most common thing if it's been that amount of time. And again, if the other person isn't even willing to communicate, it's going to make it even more difficult.
Right, because you don't even know what he needs in order for him to be satisfied or happy in the relationship, because he's not communicating it.
Right.
And oftentimes when we don't have that information, right, the person doesn't know how to articulate their feelings, or they're not aware enough to be able to, you know, hey, this is what I need from you. We'll start running this hamster wheel, trying to figure it out. And we'll stay in the relationship. Like, well, if I jump higher, or if I, you know, do this, or if I cook, or if I clean, or if I, you know, dick them down, if I do, you know, we'll start making up things in our head and try everything when those may not be the things that he needs, but we're trying so hard to make this relationship work that we're overexerting ourselves for the fantasy. And the truth of the matter is he's not ready. He's not there. You guys are not on the same page.
And is she doing all the work? Because while she's making up the story and all the things that she could do, what's happening over here?
Yeah.
And so I like people to come to their own conclusions, but I guide them with, okay, well, what are the facts? The facts aren't going to lie. Our stories are going to get us in all kinds of places that are not the best. So let's go with the facts. Is this what you want? Is this how it's supposed to look? If we order a pizza and we said we wanted pepperoni and we get a cheese pizza, we're not getting what we want. Do we just look at it and say, okay, this could be cheese? It's not though. We wanted pepperoni. So we need to really lay down what are the facts, what's actually going on here. And that sometimes will help us untangle all the little storylines that we gave ourselves.
I love today's episode. Sharita is sharing with you the facts of life on The Spicy Life. Give us the fact, Sharita. If people want to start working with you or use your service, where can they find you and what can they do in order to, you know, start having you in their presence? Or, you know, do you have any programs? Like, please, you know, educate everybody, let them know, how can they get a hold of you?
Okay, so I'm on Instagram, Sharita Bates, at Sharita Bates, pretty simple. I'm on Facebook, Sharita Bates. That's it. I put out right now, I'm working on a course that's going to be coming out in the fall. And I put out a lot of posts and just little simple things. You sign up for my newsletter, you'll get a lot of free stuff. And then I have a podcast that's going to start coming out in the fall as well, with a lot of free information that's helpful, little bite-sized tips that hopefully if people follow, it will change your life, I promise. And it'll be fun. It'll be a really fun thing to do. So Instagram and Facebook.
The more of us that are walking in our purpose and serving others, the more that you guys will get from this, right? So by all means, make sure that you guys follow Sherita. You guys can always play with my Twitter or stroke my IG at Spicy Madi. Go to thespicylife.com, schedule a free consultation. You guys can also sign up for my e-course that I have right now going on, Your Purpose Made Awaits. And also you guys can not just click up and subscribe, but share this episode with a friend. If you love yourself and you love your friend, you will share this episode with them and with the world as well. Repost. Okay. And there you guys have it. You have just been spiced.
The Spicy Life.